Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, January 2nd, 2020. ECSO received surprise of hundreds of holiday cards. Gift sent from Cards for Kids. The story was written by Royal McGregor. Hector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths and his deputies received a surprise gift on New Year's Eve. A box sent to the Hector County Sheriff's Office contained several hundred holiday cards from Cards for Kids. Griffiths said he was awestruck when he opened the box on Tuesday morning to find hundreds of holiday cards that came from children in 26 states and Canada. Quote, "It was a surprise because it just arrived here in a box," Griffiths said during a phone interview. Continuing the quote, "It's filled with all kinds of Christmas cards, and it's just awesome. We had it spread out across the table. It was just awesome. It's very heartwarming to know there are people in different parts of our country that are thinking about Odessa and Hector County." End quote. Cards for Kids is an organization that sends cards to communities that have been impacted by mass shootings. Odessa experienced one of its darkest days on August 31st when a 36-year-old gunman killed seven people and injured 25 others with an AR-style rifle. Seth Ator, the deceased gunman, was shot to death by multiple law enforcement officers near Odessa's Synergy Theater. Griffiths explained it has been a tough year for Odessa and Hector County, but he said the messages on the cards have been uplifting. Quote, "Many of the cards were something to the effect of, 'We are thinking of you this holiday season. We hope that you have a better year.'" End quote. "The cards showed that they were thinking of us. Their thoughts and prayers are with us." End quote. Griffiths said receiving the cards on New Year's Eve can bring hope as 2020 begins. Quote, "It makes your heart feel good that there are many other people in this country that have love in their heart to send something like that to show the fellow citizens of this country that they are thinking of them," Griffiths said. Quote, "It takes time for people to do that, to gather that up, to box it up, and send it to us." End quote. Here are Odessa American quick hits. Vaquero Exhibition. The Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri Avenue in Midland, presents Vaquero, Genesis of the Texas Cowboy, an exhibition created by the Whitliff Collections at the Alkick Library, Texas State University at San Marcos, presented in partnership with Humanities Texas, the state affiliate for the National Endowment for the Humanities. The exhibition will be available through January 17th. In the early 1970s, noted Texas historian Joe Franz offered Bill Whitliff a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to visit a ranch in northern Mexico where the vaqueros still worked cattle in traditional ways. Whitliff photographed the vaqueros as they went about their daily chores that had changed little since the first Mexican cow herders learned to work cattle from a horse's back. Whitliff captured a way of life that now exists only in memory and in the photographs included in this exhibition. Museum hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday and 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, call 683-2882. On the net, go online at museumsw.org. Jersey Boys on Stage. Broadway in the Basin has scheduled Jersey Boys, presented by Christiani's Jewelers, on February 5th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tickets range from $57 to $97 for the musical that tells the tale of how crooner Frankie Valli rose to fame in the 1950s. Go online at wagnernoel.com. Comfy clothes needed. The Crisis Center of West Texas Response Closet needs new, comfy clothes such as yoga pants, leggings, sports bras, t-shirts, and sweatshirts in all sizes and larger sizes, large to 4XL. CCWTX is responding to sexual assaults at higher rates than last year, and many survivors are left with nothing but a hospital gown after their clothes are collected for evidence by law enforcement. Donations may be dropped off at the center at 910B South Grant Avenue in Odessa. For more information, call 333-2527. Go online at www.ccwtx.org. This is the medical advice column, To Your Good Health, by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, many years ago, while I was battling breast cancer, a scan showed spots of concern in my mid-thoracic area. Upon further testing, it was determined that I have sarcoidosis. My pulmonologist warned me to stop all calcium and vitamin D supplements. Now, after 15 years, my primary care doctor wants me to begin taking a multivitamin. But I can find no supplements that eliminate calcium and/or vitamin D. My husband was a pharmacist, and I still use his partner as my current pharmacist. He can think of no way to get past this requirement. Answer. These granulomas have the ability to make an active type of vitamin D, 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D. The active form occasionally can cause calcium levels in the blood to increase, although many people with sarcoidosis have low vitamin D. I suspect your pulmonologist had found normal or high levels of calcium and vitamin D, hence the advice to avoid supplementation. I'd ask your doctor if there's a specific reason to be concerned about vitamin intake beyond your suboptimal diet. If you still want to take a vitamin, you could consider B-complex vitamins with vitamin C. These have negligible calcium and no vitamin D. Here are some death notices that appeared in the Odessa American on Thursday, January 2nd. Maria Hinojos Barragan, age 76, of Odessa, died Monday, December 30th, in Odessa. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, January 3rd, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery and Rose Hill Section. Pastor Felomino Galindo is officiating. Nancy Lee Evans, age 79, of Odessa, died Saturday, December 28th, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, January 4th, at Second Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Karen Gail Evanson, age 70, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 29th, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Herlinda Lujan, age 65, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 29th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at Thursday, 1 p.m. on January 2nd, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Interment follows at Odessa 2 Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Albert Darrell Walker, age 83, of Odessa, died Saturday, December 28th, in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, January 2nd, at the Los Angeles Gardens section of the Ector County Cemetery. Mike Bartlett is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. These are letters to the editor of the Odessa American. The first letter comes from E.R. Edmondson of Odessa. It is time for the American people to vote the liberal Democrats out of office. And, where necessary, the American people will need to vote out rhinos as well. We cannot continue from now until next November hearing about impeachment of Donald Trump. Trump is following the law, while the liberals have committed more impeachment acts than we can remember, beginning with the Clintons. Beware, Democrats, because what you are doing is going to backfire on you. The American people will not remain silent much longer. Bullying the British colonists caused the country of Great Britain to lose an entire continent in 1776. Remember, Democrats, socialists, and liberals, that history always repeats itself. Signed, E.R. Edmondson. The next letter comes from David Newman of Odessa. 6 weeks ago, I made the hardest decision of my life. I left a college at which I had taught very successfully. Student and supervisor evaluations are unequivocal on this point, in order to return to Odessa High School. Sometimes I need to remind myself why I returned to a system of public education that I have criticized very publicly. So why is public education in Odessa worth a second chance? On Sunday, September 29, 2019, the OA ran Ruth Campbell's piece on the ECISD's effort to make AP, Advanced Placement, IB, International Baccalaureate, and dual credit programs as successful as possible this year. I will admit that the chance to work with students in these programs played a significant role in cementing my decision to return to Odessa. I will also admit, happily, that my students and the astonishing potential that they have to change the world they will inherit from us remain a compelling, a convincing argument that the job I am meant to do is here at OHS. Lisa Roth, Odessa High's AP-IB coordinator, explained the matter very well at the end of Ms. Campbell's article. Quote, "It's not just content, but critical thinking. What we're really preparing for is how to entrust kids with a future in which we have many exciting things to develop and many problems to solve." End quote. When I have railed against public education, I have done so because I see components of the system that seem not to accept or act on this remarkably simple premise. If our students do not learn how to think critically, the cost to all of us will be incalculable. I am not speaking of acquisition of skills. I am not describing focused career preparation. These are important goals, but they should be subordinate to the non-negotiable idea that a culture filled with people who cannot think for themselves, who cannot solve basic problems, is not in any way sustainable. One of the foundational ideas in the history of education is the need for learning its own sake, not learning to get a job, but learning why jobs matter. Not learning history to pass a test, but learning, as T.S. Eliot said, that history is what we are. Without history, we would live with a paralyzing amnesia about what our lives mean. Without a similar intrinsic curiosity about language, we would quickly reach a point where we would have no ability to share solutions to basic problems, to teach history, to encapsulate the most elegant, the most enduring, the most personally valuable ideas into words, what we love, what is sacred to us, what we must know to survive, all of this is made out of words, and without the ability to experience the complexity and beauty and necessity of language, we would be animals bereft of past or future, passive creatures to whom things happen, and never beings with the unique divine spark. It is because we have words that we have the dangerous freedom of moral choice. We need math, history, English, science. Each discipline provides essential and essentially complementary elements in the mental, emotional, and spiritual constitution of beings who can control their own fate in an increasingly complex and compartmentalized world. We need thinkers who understand why, exactly why, a Holocaust might be enabled by the unthinking compartmentalization of our lives. AP and IB classes have one role above all others. They ask kids to think quite literally outside the boxes our culture uses to pack up its daunting complications. In these classes, the most important words kids learn are why and how. Why do humans fight? Why do so many of us seek confirmation bias, fake news? Why do so many of us remain passive or complacent in the face of small evils and giant evils? How is a 2,300-year-old argument between Aristotle and Callicles exactly repeated in contemporary debates over the value of truth and the value of power? There is no lesson plan. There are no texts for the most terrible problems we will confront our brightest kids. Such problems are by definition beyond our ability to know in advance. But there are lessons that can prepare kids to be autonomous moral and intellectual agents. These lessons are interdisciplinary. They are provocative. They demand connections that defy everything about us that is content with our Procrustean-ism. Ironically, Word does not recognize the word I just used. That fact expresses my message better than all the other words I have used. Complying without thought or reaching for a phone will not save any of us from the unknown. AP and IB exist to teach one lesson. Learning what to think means nothing if one does not know how to think. Signed, David Nguyen of Odessa. This next letter comes from Sandy Milner of Odessa. In Randy Flo's letter of September 30th, he says that I don't understand polls and statistics. He is correct in that I am not thoroughly conversant with the mechanics of them, but that does not negate my point that a poll of 1,000 or 2,000 people cannot possibly reflect the beliefs of approximately 320 million people in the U.S. To be accurate, the poll takers should actually travel to all 50 states and conduct their poll by selecting a minimum of 10% of each state's population. This selection should include people from urban, suburban, and rural populations. Then it might be fairly representative of what people really believe. And, like I said, remember that these are the same polls which said Hillary Clinton had a 93% chance of winning the 2016 election. Then he goes on to beat the dead horse of assault weapons. He thinks they should be banned and mandatory turn-ins instituted. He completely ignores the fact that so-called assault weapons account for a small percentage of the deaths due to firearms. Rifles are used in about 350 killings per year. That is all rifles, of which assault rifles are a lesser percentage. Since 1966, approximately only 1,077 deaths have occurred in mass shootings. The vast majority of gun deaths are suicides, about 62% of which no amount of new gun laws will stop, when all present gun laws, approximately 20,000, have not worked. The actual number of murders by guns amount to about 1,400 per year. The rest are justified shootings, police shootings, and accidental shootings. And nearly all of those murders occur in only 5 or 6 cities, which happen to have the strictest gun laws. Finally, he says that all of we gun rights supporters claim that the anti-gunners want to take all guns away from us, and says that this is simply not true. Evidently, he has his head in the sand, or else he would look closely at the Democratic platform in the present time and all past platforms. Many of the Democratic congresspersons have openly stated that their ultimate goal is the complete ban on private ownership of guns, and don't think it couldn't happen here. I would be willing to bet that the British people never thought it would happen in their country either, but it did. And it came about a little at a time. Remember the old Arab saying about how to get a camel into a tent. First you get his nose in. Think about it, people. Signed, Sandy Milner. Mother, daughters enjoy sharing career paths at MCH. The story was written by Royal McGregor. After spending roughly 20 years as a nurse in the neonatal intensive care unit at the University of Tennessee Medical Center in Knoxville, Tennessee, Tommy Watson decided to retire. That retirement didn't last very long. During her second travel nursing assignment, Watson found herself in Odessa, and Medical Center Hospital had an open position as the unit director of the NICU and pediatrics. Watson applied for the position, was offered the job, accepted it, moved nearly 1,200 miles from Knoxville to Odessa, and has held that position at MCH for the last 6.5 years. Quote, "This job was open, and I liked it here," Watson said. "I applied and got it. I'm one of those long-termers. I don't tend to leave," end quote. About 4 years after Watson moved, her eldest daughter also made a home in Odessa. Jennifer Stevens, age 38, with her husband and 4 children, relocated to Odessa in March of 2017, and about 1.5 years later, Watson's second and final daughter, 34-year-old Julie Watson, moved to the West Texas city. Both of Tammy Watson's daughters followed in her footsteps to MCH. Stevens works as a paramedic in the emergency room, and Julie Watson is a unit clerk for labor and delivery. Quote, "I've had the opportunity to come and work in my mother's unit when she's short-staffed," Stevens said. "It has been a great experience for me. I've gotten to know a lot of directors and gotten a really cool around-the-hospital experience being able to work in different areas," end quote. Tammy Watson says it's a unique experience to plan family events as all 3 are at MCH at different times. Stevens works the day shift on the weekends, while Julie Watson works nights. Tammy Watson is scheduled Monday through Friday. Quote, "We manage especially since Stevens and Julie Watson work on opposite shifts," said Tammy Watson. Quote, "We all really love the hospital. It's very family-friendly, and the support that you get from the executive team and the directors are phenomenal, and that's why I stayed," end quote. Though the trio rarely spend time at MCH together, the 3 logged emotionally draining hours at the hospital August 31st after the mass shooting shocked Odessa when a 36-year-old gunman shot and killed 7 people and left 25 others injured. Stevens was working in the emergency room as the first wave of patients came to MCH. The hospital received 14 patients, while Odessa Regional Medical Center and Midland Memorial each had six. Tammy Watson drove in and spent time at the hospital's reunification center, while Julie Watson came in for her night shift. Quote, "It was extremely emotionally draining, but being in this profession, you always think of your patients and their family first," Tammy Watson said. "That's what you are trained to do, and that's your personality. That's all we were thinking about, is taking care of those patients and those families. By the time I went home that night, I was emotionally whipped. I was totally drained, but had that good feeling that we did the best we could and helped the families," end quote. Stevens remembers during her shift it was all business, but a switch flipped when she got home. She said she spent the rest of the night lying in bed with her husband and children. As Stevens, her mother and sister went through the same experiences on August 31st. Stevens said there is an understanding between the trio that each will talk about their emotions when they are ready. Quote, "I find it really wonderful being part of a medical family, because if I'm having a bad day at work, my husband does push me, my mom doesn't push me," Stephen said. "When I'm ready to talk, I'll say something," end quote. Tammy Watson said the ability to flip the switch from family members to colleague is a seamless transition. The trio can be interacting as mother and daughters or as sisters, but when they arrive at work or come out of the lunchroom at the hospital, the three turn back into colleagues. Quote, "We go to lunch together, and we sit and laugh and have a good time, but then we go back to the serious part," Tammy Watson said. Continuing the quote, "If there's something odd going on, I might go down and help them. If there's something crazy going on in pediatrics, she will come up there. We are still able to work well together," end quote. In 1993, Tammy Watson graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree from the University of Tennessee. She continued to push the importance of education to her two daughters, even though it wasn't met with immediate success. Watson said she kept planting the seed about the possibility of earning college degrees. Julie Watson and Stevens finally took the bait and are both attending Odessa College. Stevens is expected to graduate in December and then start her master's program immediately following. Julie Watson is taking her basics at Odessa College, but will plan on transferring to Midland College for respiratory therapy. Quote, "My mother kept telling me to go to nurse, but I was stubborn, and it took me a while," said Stevens, who worked as a paramedic for 16 years. Quote, "When I told her that I was going to nursing school, she said, 'It's about time,'" end quote. Dropouts perplex Permian Basin educators. ECISD rate defies conventional solutions. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Persuading a young man or woman not to leave high school before graduation can be difficult, particularly in Odessa, where the Ector County Independent School District loses 40% of its students between the 9th and 12th grades. That rate is attributable to multiple causes, among them the lure of high-paying oil field jobs, teenage pregnancies, homelessness, and problems at home or school. District statistics indicate that of the 2,519 students who began the ninth grade for the 2016-2017 school year, 1,500 graduated last spring. The Texas Education Agency says ECISD's graduation rate for a four-year period in the 2017-2018 was 84.3%. The state rate was 89.7%. ECISD lead social worker Scott Randolph said the state list the four-year graduation rate for Permian High School in 2017-2018 at 92.2%. Odessa High's rate was 76.8%. Leading a staff of eight, Randolph said some who didn't walk the commencement stage had moved away while others were homeschooled and a few had died, but the majority were dropouts. He says the district does try to find students who have dropped out by calling and mailing letters. Caseworkers will conduct home visits to try and find them. Teachers, coaches, and administrators also help out. Quote, "It's a big problem, and many factors contribute to it," Randolph said, "such as a high mobility rate. Many of those who had been held back after failing to qualify for the next higher grade were among the casualties. Quote, "A lot of times they are older and feel out of place," he said. "They get behind and lose hope. They don't feel like they need to be in school anymore," end quote. In a working-class family, Randolph said, a high school boy may see his father making a good living as an oil field worker without a high school diploma and decide to follow suit. Quote, "We try to convince them to stay, but they can get decent jobs here in the Permian Basin without a high school degree, and sometimes they see the lure of working and take it," he said. Texas law requires students to stay in school until after they complete the school year in which they turn 19 years old, but state legislators recently lowered the penalty that parents might incur from a $500 fine to a ticket with no possible fine or jail time. Quote, "I wish the courts had more leeway in what they could do," Randolph said. "I think it should be a little more severe than just a ticket," end quote. He said parents could still be incarcerated for violating a court order if the district pursued it that far, but judges are loath to send such defendants to the overcrowded county jail. Randolph said the district's high schools have dropout intervention specialists and numerous assistant principals who try to confront the problem by getting to know the students and offering help. He said the most effective antidotes to dropping out are sports, arts like band and choir, and vocational training in ECISD's career and technical education programs in such trades as cosmetology, nursing, food service, auto mechanics and bodywork, building trades, welding, culinary arts, and agriculture. The district has five high schools, with about 4,000 students each at Odessa and Permian High Schools, 350 at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, and roughly 400 each at Odessa Collegiate Academy and Odessa Career and Technical Early College High School, or OC Techs. Quote, "Most kids do awesome and move on toward graduation with no problems, but a big percentage struggle and need extra support," Randolph said. Continuing the quote, "If families talk to the schools and tell us what's going on, a lot of times we can remove the barriers that are causing kids to drop out. Parents are super busy, hustling and bustling, and students are easily distracted. Extracurriculars like sports, band, and workforce training are the golden tickets that keep kids in school. College can tend to be overrated," end quote. ECISD school board member Doyle Woodall, who became a welder and formed his own company, H&W Fluid and Repair, after graduating from OHS, says he would have gotten a quicker start if he could have studied welding in high school. Estimating that the district has from 1,000 to 1,200 students at the CTE track, Woodall said, quote, "I'm all for anything we can do to give these kids a head start. We'll add plumbing and air conditioning this year or next year. We're working with Odessa College and looking at how to expand the program because we have more wanting to get into it than we can accommodate. We need to make sure we have a place for every kid who wants to get into the CTE program." End quote. Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards, a major benefactor at UTPB, said the homeschooling system is sometimes used by parents to let their children in effect drop out. Quote, "The parents can say they are homeschooling their students and sign them out for homeschool, and then it doesn't count as dropping out," Edwards said. Quote, "We're losing 10 to 15% at every grade level, and we need to figure out how to keep these kids incentivized to stay in school and graduate. Every statistic shows that they do so much better in life by having a high school education, and more so by having any type of college." End quote. The Permian graduate said the region has a lot at stake because it will need 50,000 skilled workers in the next 20 years. Midland ISD Director of Accountability and School Improvement, Mary Janicek, says her district's annual mid-September dropout recovery walk has gotten good results by contacting eligible students who have failed to enroll and encouraging them to return. Quote, "Many are surprised and happy to see us," Janicek said. "We got 7 last year, and overall, since the program started in 2008, we have had close to 40 come back." End quote. Janicek said 8.6% of Midland's 9th through 12th graders dropped out in 2016, 7.5% in 2017, and 6.5% in 2018. Compared to the grade of 75, or C, given to ECISD in August by the Texas Education Agency, El Paso ISD got an 86, or B, and was a recognized district. Quote, "EPISD's score is the highest for urban districts that serve overwhelmingly large numbers of low-income students," said Director of Student Retention and Truancy Mark Mendoza, adding that his district has a 4-year graduation rate of 83.9%. EPISD Superintendent Juan Cabrera said in a news release that his district's focus on active learning is the key. Quote, "By concentrating on effective teaching instead of test preparation, our students are learning at higher levels and performing better," Cabrera said. Continuing the quote, "I commend our teachers for embracing innovation and putting our students on a path to success," end quote. Christy Craddock urges women to be engaged. Railroad commissioner excited by women wanting to work in the industry. The story was written by Milla McEwen. A record crowd for a Women's Energy Network Permian Basin luncheon flocked to the Petroleum Club's ballroom Wednesday to hear from Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock. Quote, "We're excited to have Christy here," said Lacey Stretcher, chapter president. "She's someone who's gone into a predominantly male field and shined. She's a great role model," end quote. For her part, Craddock applauded the gathering for being engaged. Quote, "I'm seeing more and more women want to be in this industry, and I'm excited about that," she said following the luncheon. Craddock pointed out that the head of the commission's pipeline division is a woman, as is her deputy. A woman headed the commission's oil and gas division before moving over to the International Oil and Gas Compact Commission, and the heads of the hearings division and human resources are women. The state geologist, Leslie Savage, has been with the agency for more than 30 years, Craddock said. She says she looks to hire the best people, smart people with good knowledge. Quote, "Good managers recognize where their weaknesses are," she said. "The commission has done a good job of accepting smart people across the board," end quote. As a manager and as a woman, Craddock says she not only looks for the best, smartest people, but looks for ways for the industry to offer opportunities for everyone. Quote, "It's important to continue bringing people up," she said. Asked about working in a male-dominated field, Craddock said one secret to her success was finding good mentors, something she advised young women to do. Her advice is to find mentors, ask questions, and listen, and continue being engaged. Quote, "We need people to run for political office," she said, "but we also need people to serve as mentors," end quote. The Women's Energy Network was founded in 1994 with the goal of supporting career and leadership development of women across the energy value chain. It has grown to include 20 chapters, including in the Permian Basin, and chapters in Canada and Mexico. This was reprinted from the Houston Chronicle. Loopholes in background checks put Texans in danger. Even before the mass shooting in Odessa, Texas's two highest elected officials knew about a dangerous background check loophole in stranger-to-stranger gun sales. Gun reform advocate Ed Scruggs attended a meeting called after the El Paso shooting, in which he says both Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick acknowledged the loophole was ripe for abuse, and that it wasn't a smart way to sell a weapon, since Texans could be selling to a terrorist and not even know it. Both seemed genuinely concerned, Scruggs told the Texas Observer, and he was encouraged. Then, a little over a week later, that very loophole was used by a gunman who killed 7 people and wounded at least 21 in Odessa and Midland. In Texas, a background check is not required for private sales between individuals. So the Odessa gunman was allowed to buy an assault-style rifle from a private seller, even though he failed a background check in 2014 because of a, quote, mental health issue. This revolution seemed to prompt a shift in Patrick, an ardent conservative, with an A-plus rating from the National Rifle Association. He broke with a gun lobby and said he was, quote, willing to take an arrow to support expanding Texas background checks to stranger-to-stranger sales. Patrick's about-face was as surprising as it was welcome, as was his subsequent steadfastness in the face of withering criticism from the gun lobby. Other state leaders, including Abbott, need to follow suit, to follow their consciences rather than their campaign contributions, and to act before another mass shooting tells us what we already know. Texas gun laws leave us vulnerable to more gun violence. We're not talking about infringing on anyone's Second Amendment rights or gun confiscation campaigns targeting law-abiding citizens. We're talking about tossing out the absolutism that has kept officials from passing common-sense reforms. We can't afford to see more lives lost and more families in mourning when solutions are within reach. Let's start by simply closing gaps in Texas laws that expose the general public and law enforcement officials to danger. Here's another flaw in the background system that has gotten some attention in recent weeks. Under federal law, quote, fugitives from justice, unquote, are ineligible to buy guns. But a little-noticed federal rule change in 2017 limited the classification to people who cross state lines. Now, in Texas, people with arrest warrants, including even for murder, issued in the state before indictment, could legally pass a background check and buy a gun. That means someone like Dalton Brosch, a Houston man wanted for threatening to stab his stepfather, was able to pass a background check and buy an AR-15 from an Austin gun store. The 23-year-old was arrested in July with the cache of weapons. State Representative Gina Hinojosa, a Democrat from Austin, is using that case and what she called a gaping hole in the system to amplify the need to address gun violence. She is one of 63 Democrats who signed a letter urging Abbott to call an emergency session of the legislature. Other states, including Massachusetts, have passed state laws closing the loophole created by the federal regulation, noted Scruggs, board president of Texas Gun Sense, which advocates stricter gun regulation. Texas needs to follow suit. Allowing a person wanted for a crime to buy guns leaves everyone at risk, including law enforcement officers tasked with bringing suspects into custody. Quote, someone should not be able to go to a gun store and stock up for when police come to take them away, Sprague said. Abbott resisted calls for a special session, but he has issued recommendations for ways to keep guns out of dangerous hands, including encouraging voluntary background checks in stranger-to-stranger sales. We need more than encouragement. Quote, there is a realization that it is politically unacceptable to continue to do nothing, Hinojosa told the editorial board. Continuing the quote, Texans are concerned about this and rightfully expect that our elected leaders will take action, end quote. We need to close the loopholes that put Texans in danger. We need politicians who back up their words with action. Internal review brings leadership changes at ProPetro. There are a number of changes to executive leadership at ProPetro following an internal review by ProPetro's Holding Audit Committee, according to a press release from the company. There were no layoffs in conjunction with the review. Any layoffs at the company are attributed to market conditions. The leadership changes are: Philip Gobe, current chairman of the board of directors, has been appointed executive chairman of ProPetro Holdings and will serve as principal executive officer for purposes of the company's annual and quarterly reports filed with the SEC. He will share responsibility for overseeing the remediation of control deficiencies identified in the internal review. Dale Redman will continue as chief executive officer, responsible for managing day-to-day operations and pursuing business development opportunities. Jeffrey Smith, formerly the company's chief financial officer, now serves as chief administrative officer with primary responsibility for information technology, human resources, procurement, and risk management functions. Darren G. Holderness will serve as interim chief financial officer while ProPetro conducts a search for a permanent CFO. Newton W. Trey Wilson III joins the company as general counsel and corporate secretary. Ilo Amavuzi, who has been at ProPetro since 2017, has been promoted to chief accounting officer. He succeeds Ian Denholm, who resigned from the position. David Sledge, chief operating officer, and Sam Sledge, director of investor relations, will continue in their current roles. The audit committee and management have not identified to date any items that would require restatement of the company's previously reported balance sheets, statements of operations, statements of shareholders' equity, or statements of cash flows. Along with the new executive leadership, there is an improved organizational structure to strengthen internal controls, according to the release. Company officials say they plan to make the required Securities and Exchange Commission filings and become current in its filing obligations as soon as possible. Midland County Sheriff's Office remembers Naylor 5 years after his death. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The Midland County Sheriff's Office honored Sergeant Mike Naylor in a ceremony Wednesday on the 5-year anniversary of his death. Naylor was killed on October 9, 2014, while responding to a mental health call, Captain Donald Graham said. He said the individual that Naylor was trying to help shot and killed him. Quote, "We must remember the lives Mike has touched and the lives he has saved," Graham said during the ceremony. "There is a price to pay for justice, and sometimes that price is losing a great person," end quote. He said law enforcement officers understand the dangers they face and the risks they take so that others don't have to. After Graham spoke, MCSO officers lowered the American flag that was hanging outside the sheriff's office and folded it before marching in formation. In an interview following the ceremony, Graham said that Naylor was well-trained in mental health and was integral in establishing the mental health program they have now. Quote, "Mike is a person that you could count on at any moment and ask him something to do. He'd be there to back you and help you and give you his shirt off his back," Graham said. "He was just a great human being on duty and off duty," end quote. Graham said incidents in which police officers are assaulted or killed are becoming more frequent nationally and locally, and the sheriff's office is adjusting accordingly. Quote, "Anytime we have an incident or anything, we learn," he said. "We adapt ourselves. We retrain ourselves to make ourselves safer," end quote. The Labor Day weekend shooting in Odessa was one example, he said, of law enforcement needing to learn and adapt based on an unforeseen situation. The shooting was unique in that it was spread out over several crime scenes rather than taking place in a central location. Quote, "We've been trained for mass shootings in buildings. We have never been trained for mobile," Graham said. "We are now readapting that and making it to where we can be trained that way also," end quote. This year's ceremony for Naylor was the first without longtime Sheriff Gary Painter, who died a few months earlier at the age of 72. Graham became emotional while talking about Painter. Quote, "We're still trying to recover," he said through tears. "It's a loss that we can't replace. I could be here for an hour telling you everything I thought about Gary Painter. He was a good human being, and we are trying to continue with his tradition," he said. ANWR donates $250,000 to city for parks. Oil Man provides additional $25,000 for MPD fund. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. S. Javed ANWR again has donated to the City of Midland for parks development. The Midlander announced Thursday he was giving $250,000 to the city. That is on top of the $500,000 he donated in January. The president and chief executive officer of Midland Energy and Petroplex Energy also donated $10,000 to the Midland Police Department's Benevolent Fund. Around September 11th, he also made a donation of $35,000 to the Midland Fire Department. ANWR spoke Thursday about wanting others to be involved in philanthropy in Midland. He again said those who have the ability should seek opportunities to give back to help those less fortunate. In January, ANWR announced a $500,000 donation to the city that he says was used to help the Centennial Park project, which is currently under construction next to the Bush Convention Center. He said he hopes his more recent donation will be used to improve playground equipment at parks across the city. ANWR previously told the Reporter-Telegram the reason for his donation for parks was simple: Children in the community need things to do and places to put their energy to good use. Quote, "We have great potential," Anwar said after his donation in January. Continuing the quote, "We need to make this city livable and attractive when all these people come to this town. They can stick around and raise their families here," end quote. Anwar previously has been honored for his philanthropy with the Outstanding Philanthropist Award from the Permian Chapter Association of Fundraising Professionals and the Hope Award from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. He has made considerable donations to Hillander School, where his children attended, as well as the University of Texas, Midland Memorial Hospital, the United Way of Midland, and the Boy Scouts of America Buffalo Trail Council, according to previous Reporter Telegram articles. Chevron, Pioneer, are biggest donors for Bond. We Choose Our Future received $178,650 in total contributions. The story was written by Brandy Addison. Special Purpose Action Committee, We Choose Our Future, received more than $178,000 in total contributions from August 8th to October 6th, according to campaign finance report filings for the period that ended Monday. The top two contributors were Chevron Corporation and Pioneer Natural Resources, which donated $50,000 each. We Choose Our Future is led by co-chairs Christine Foreman and Dave Joyner in support of Midland ISD's $569 million bond that will be on the ballot for the November 5th election. Notable contributors to the campaign included Midland College President Steve Thomas, MISD Board President Rick Davis, former U.S. Secretary of Commerce Donald Evans, MC Board President Linda Cowden, Concho CEO Tim Leach, and several corporations and businesses. Monetary political contributions. The total monetary contributions received from 22 individuals totaled $44,650. $5,000, Linda Cowden, Don Evans, Jack Harper, Dan Horde III, and Tim Leach. $3,000, June Cowden. $2,500, Barry Beal Jr. and Farrell Davis. $2,000, Scott Kidwell. $1,000, Carol Warren, Paul Russell Myers, and Stuart Beal. $500, Rick Davis. $250, Michael McWilliams and Steve Thomas. Monetary contributions from corporations or labor organizations. Eight businesses and corporations gave a total of $134,000 to We Choose Our Future. $50,000, Pioneer Natural Resources and Chevron Policy and Government Affairs. $10,000, Warren Catt and Kennedy Minerals. $5,000, Miles Boldrick on behalf of Statewide Minerals and Apache Corporation. $2,000, Wildcat Oil Tools and White Star Energy. Political expenditures made from political contributions. We Choose Our Future's political expenditures made from contributions totals $75,440.63. The total contributions maintained as of the last day of the reporting period total more than $103,000. $28,700, the Tyson Organization, Calling Service. $23,549, Baselice and Associates Incorporated, Polling. $10,021.88, A1 Sign Engravers, Yard Signs. $4,500, Courtney Lunsford, field organizer, $3,429.17, A1 embroidery for shirts, $2,200, Midland Reporter Telegram for advertising, $1,339.58, Facebook for advertising, $843.17, Office Depot for supplies and printing, $591.83, Safeguard Business Systems for stickers and badges, $200 for Niall Walker canvassing, $140 Imagine Raymond for canvassing, $50 Call Hub for texting service.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.